the entire city was whipped up into kind of a hysteria. The newspapers were competing with each other for coverage of the case. It was a time of kind of yellow journalism, of lurid headlines, of reported but unfounded rumors. Also, at some level, very quickly, both Leo Frank and Mary Fagan became symbols. Mary Fagan, a symbol of deflowered white womanhood, of child labor in the mills. Leo Frank as a symbol of kind of Yankee capitalism. And moreover, Leo Frank was Jewish, and there were wild rumors about, you know, his sexuality taking place. So very, very charged kind of environment as you enter the actual trial. The courtroom is not air-conditioned, of course. It's hot. There are crowds outside the courtroom. It's packed. It's late July. So all this is, you know, right as we enter the trial itself.
Apparently, it came down to the prosecution accusing Frank, of course, and the defense accusing Jim Conley, who was an African-American janitor who apparently was somehow complicit with a night watchman, Newt Lee. So you've got one side against the other. And were the facts ever distilled in this case?
Yes. Conley was the key witness for the state. He stuck to his story that Leo Frank had told him that he'd killed this little girl and so forth and so on. There were doubts about Conley's testimony. The Atlanta Journal reporter had some doubts about his testimony. There were certainly doubts about Frank's guilt. An appeal began to surface nationally on behalf of Leo Frank among Jewish community leaders across the United States, the New York Times. And in fact, Leo Frank's case was appealed up to the courts. In response to these outsiders getting involved, some Georgians, most notably the former populist leader Tom Watson, who after the decline of the populists sort of resurfaced as a racist, an anti-Semite, and an anti-Catholic, kind of railed against outsiders meddling in Georgia justice and really helped fan the flames of sort of frenzy around the case even more as the appeal made its rounds through the courts. Eventually in 1915, to make a long story short, Governor John Slayton looked at the evidence in a closed hearing and felt there were some questions about Frank's guilt and commuted Frank's death sentence to life imprisonment with the thought that after the furor died down, perhaps it could be reduced even further. This enraged people like Watson and others. Watson certainly raised the specter of lynching. And indeed, a plan to lynch Leo Frank emerged. And it came from prominent residents of Cobb County, the county of Mary Fagan's origin, leaders of the community, who organized this very well-thought-out, arranged murder plot, basically, where they sent caravans of automobiles along back roads to Milledgeville, where Frank was imprisoned in the state prison at that time, bound the guards, cut the wires, removed Frank, went back along back roads to Cobb County, where they hanged Leo Frank in August 1915, not too far from Mary Fagan's grave.
Was anyone ever prosecuted for the lynching?
No. No one was. To some degree, this was a secret. You know, it was a tragic thing. All these people knew each other, you know, and that's one of the reasons why it was kept hush for so many years. These folks still had to deal with each other in everyday life.
The Frank case had significant ramifications, not just for Atlanta, but the South. It seemed to reverberate in opposing directions. On the one hand, you've got the rebirth of the Ku Klux Klan. And how about in the other direction?
On the other hand, it did lead to the formation of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. It had ramifications in other ways. To some degree, the German Jewish community that had been here since Atlanta's inception and felt very much a part of the city really felt threatened, as if sort of the scaffolding had been knocked out underneath them. They really felt much more perilous than they, in a perilous position than they had been before. You know, so there were ripple effects in the Jewish community and the larger Atlanta community for decades to come.
Fast forward to 1982.
Okay.
There's an office boy at the pencil factory.
Right. Alonzo Mann had been a 14-year-old boy at the pencil factory, and he had actually testified in the Frank case. And as he was nearing the end of his life, a reporter from the Nashville Tennessean came across him, and the reporter heard Mann's story. Mann's story was that Jim Conley, rather than Leo Frank, had been the guilty party, had been the murderer of Mary Fagan. He went back to his editor, John Siegenthaler of the Nashville Tennessean, and he said, I heard, had a conversation with this guy, and he talked about a murder that took place a long time in Atlanta, and the wrong man was arrested and convicted for the crime, and the Siegenthaler said, well, we don't sell very many newspapers in Atlanta. And the reporter said, well, it's the Leo Frank case. And Siegenthaler said, well, we're going to put a team on this. And, you know, they came out with a big splashy coverage of this testimony with Alonzo Mann answering to a polygraph test and all of this sort of stuff. It led to a real reinvestigation of the case. Eventually, in 1985, the Georgia Pardon and Paroles Board awarded a posthumous pardon to Leo Frank, not on the basis of innocence or guilt, I might add, but rather on the circumstances surrounding the trial. But again, Alonzo Mann, his late in life testimony, it's a very interesting thing. It's a part of this that not too many people know about. In the late 1950s, Alonzo Mann had come to Atlanta and had gone to the Atlanta Constitution and told them this story that Jim Connolly, rather than Leo Frank, was the guilty party. And they never ran the story. And they never ran the story in part because this is right around the time of the Temple bombing, 1958. You know, the powers that be at the Atlanta Constitution were afraid that it would kind of rile up the population, inflame the population, and they buried the story. But he had actually gone and told this story some 25 years earlier and had been buried by the Atlanta Constitution.
Cliff Kuhn, thanks very much.
Thank you.